This audio is brought to you by Muslim Central. Please consider donating to help cover our running costs and future projects by visiting www.muslimcentral.com/donate.
All right, so the final session, we're going to summarize some of the other congregational prayers, others more known to you than others, like the fear prayer, which you probably will never get to do, but others which are obviously you're very eager to do, like the Eid prayer, happy days. When Eid comes round, then everybody gets excited for it. And the Eid prayer, of course, two, Eid al-Fitr and Eid al-Adha. And the dates are the 1st of Shawwal and the 10th of Dhul-Hijjah for al-Adha. The Eid al-Fitr, the word itself for Eid means to come around, and it's our celebration because it keeps returning every single year. Al-Fitr, because it is the breaking of the fast of after the month of fasting. And Adha, because of the Udhiyah, which is the sacrifice which is offered in the Udhiyah. As a prayer, the ruling on this two-unit Jummah-esque type prayer, the whole actual event is very Jummah-esque in that it is two units, prayed out loud, there is a khutbah, but there are some important differences in terms of the actual ruling on it. Unlike Jum'ah, which is an absolute obligation, and I didn't mention, by the way, on Jum'ah that it's an obligation upon the males only, and again male residents, so it's not obligatory upon females, it's not obligatory upon travelers, it's not obligatory of course upon children. Whereas the Eid prayer, a number of scholars only considered it to be a sunnah mu'akkada. The Hanafi school considered it to be a wajib, and a number of scholars considered it to be a fard kifaya, which seems to be the correct position. We should take it, yani, at least as seriously as an obligation. Although frankly, this is about the only prayer that I couldn't care less having to give a ruling for, right? It's the one that I could call it non-recommended sunnah and everyone will treat it like, yani, the fard of all fards. So don't need to motivate people for this one, all right? So It's good. Fard kifaya, I'm happy to keep with. Everyone comes out for the Eid prayer, mashallah. So this two-unit prayer, when is it offered? Unlike the Jum'ah prayer, it is offered in the Duha time. And actually, quite a few prayers are offered in the Duha time. It's an open period that lends itself nicely to this kind of event, gathering temperature-wise, outside as well. It's not something which is prayed in a masjid. The sunnah is to pray the Eid prayer outside. In Muslim countries, we all know about the Eidgah, that open land that people occupy. There's a reason for that as well, because the event is trying to be as inclusive as possible. And we spoke about menstruation and the issues that it brings with the masjid, and the scholars not liking that either. And the Prophet ﷺ himself would encourage those that are menstruating and those that are in a situation where they normally wouldn't go to the masjid to also attend. And also those that might not even have enough clothes, and you know, the people were encouraged to lend and to borrow to other men and women, you know, clothes, so that they can also attend. A big atmosphere, big party atmosphere. The prayer itself has no adhan, has no iqamah, has no sunnah, has no units before it, after it. It's a straightforward, straight in. The imam gathers all the people, says, "Are you guys ready?" and then knocks out the prayer. That's the big difference with Jum'ah, that the prayer is first and the khutbah is afterwards. The exception to this would be, of course, if in a rainy kind of season or situation, it is being offered inside. If it's being offered inside the masjid, then some scholars then said you should offer the tahiyyatul masjid. Although I will add, a number of scholars also advised that this be kind of, not avoided, but because people will become confused, because you're not meant to have sunnah, but then if you keep walking in and then praying sunnah, how are they going to differentiate between you praying tahiyyatul masjid for the masjid? Well, you know that it's not for the Eid, but then they'll all stand up and start praying. So there's an argument there as well, that either you educate people actively, or you know, you refrain from praying the tahiyyatul masjid. And I think that that's something which has got good basis. The takbiratul Eid, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, la ilaha illallah, wallahu akbar, Allahu Akbar, wa lillahi alhamd, is a very emphasized sunnah, and a loud and a proud sunnah of all people, men and women, to be done from the beginning of the day, depending upon, of course, the form of the Eid. And those are, of course, details which are not of this level. But in any case, those that are to be repeated, and they are to continue until the Imam takes the minbar. So that's like the final act. The final act is you and your takbirat coming to an end, and the Imam turning around and addressing the people. And the Imam would tell the people, right, we're about to pray first, okay, we do the khutbah afterwards, and I want you to focus and maybe give a message or two and anything that needs to be said. The Imam might want to also explain the prayer as well, because the prayer itself has a few changes to a normal two rak'ah units. I told you there's no adhan or iqama, it's just a two unit loud prayer like Jum'ah, but when it starts off, it has extra takbirs. Now we've all experienced that, we've all seen it. The evidence basis for it, maybe we're not aware of, but there are a number of hadith that the scholars took and they differed over it. Imam Malik, for example, his position is that, and you know that in both units there's going to be extra takbirs. What does it mean? Like the Salatul Janazah, Salatul Eid, very, very similar in that the Imam, after starting the prayer, will just suddenly go, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, a certain number of times, and then continue, right, in each unit. But the number of takbirs, the location of these takbirs, the hand positions on these takbirs, all of these are points of difference. Where did the differences come from? Mostly based upon hadith of the Prophet ﷺ and the companions. So we have hadith from Aisha radiallahu anha, in which she said that the Prophet ﷺ in the first raka'ah would do 7 takbir, and then in the second raka'ah, 5 takbir, including the takbir of the, in addition to the takbir of the ruku'ah. So if you think about that, you know immediately in the second that there's going to be 5 extra takbirs. It's very clear. However, she didn't clarify whether in the first part when she said 7, does she mean 7 including the takbirat al-ihram or 7 in addition to takbirat al-ihram? So that's one reason for a difference of opinion. The Malikiya, they took it as that first takbir is taken from the 7. So their opinion is that it's 6 and 5. So the Hanbalis and a number of scholars, they said 7 and 5. The Malikiya said 6 and 5. The matter is flexible. This is an in addition to the normal takbirs that you would make. The takbir al-intiqal, the takbir al-ihram, etc. The Hanafis, they have their own opinion. Again, based upon some narrations and hadith. Some which are authentic enough, others maybe not authentic. In either case, enough to establish their position. Theirs is a 3 and 3 approach. The 3 extra takbirat in the first raka'ah, according to the majority of their evidences, should happen before the Fatiha. From a basic apna understanding, we understand that that is after Subhanakallahumma. Of course, it's not after Subhanakallahumma. It's at the beginning of the prayer, Fatiha being the initiation of the prayer. So before recitation, there are 3 takbirs. And then in the second raka'ah, these 3 takbirs are in a deadly position, the worst position that mankind can ever have put any takbirs. It is before you go for ruku'ah. Mans have been caught out by that many a time, many a time. So in a Hanafi way, this is how the Hanafi salah would go. The Imam would tell everybody, Imam would actually be very nice, turn around and even tell them what niyyah they have to make and actually read it out for them and say, and make sure that they know exactly what they're saying. Then he goes, Allahu Akbar, right? When he goes Allahu Akbar, everyone is now getting a chance to say Subhanakallahumma bihamdika wa tabaraka ismuka, alright? And then the Imam will go Allahu Akbar, and everybody will then repeat Allahu Akbar behind, okay? And then Allahu Akbar, and then everyone will do it silently, of course, not out loud. The people who do it loud, they're making a mistake in the first place. Nobody ever has had it narrated that they should be saying it out loud. And then Allahu Akbar, 3 extra takbirs, then the Fatiha starts. Then he will recite Subhisma Rabbika al-A'la, whatever he recites, then Allahu Akbar. Well, he won't do that, obviously. This is the Hanafi approach, right? Then we go into ruku', straight back up, sajda, 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 come straight back up, stand back up, straight into Fatiha, straight into surah, and then that's when you get done because he goes Allahu Akbar, but we all go down and he goes like that, right? Okay, so there's 3 more, and then Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. And the prayer is finished. That's the Hanafi method. According to the, and my position, by the way, is 6 and 5. Okay, my class position is 6 and 5. The hadith of 7 and 5, for my understanding, and a number of the scholars, is that it is incorporating the takbiratul ihram. By that definition, then, this is how the prayer would go. A person starts off with Allahu Akbar, and then the Imam will start, A'udhu Billahi Minash Shaitanir Rajeem. Subhanaka Allahumma bihamdik, any dua that he wants to start the prayer with. And then before he enters into the Fatiha itself, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. Six takbirat. Then recite Fatiha, recite Surah, into ruku', back up, go into sajda, back in sajda, stand back up, Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar, now five more as per the hadith. Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. Well, no, I would be Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Alhamdulillah, and then go Fatiha, finish the prayer off, go into ruku', everything done. So the three imams are with the takbirat at the beginning, and they only differed in 7 and 6 at the first rak'ah, but they agreed on the 5. And Abu Hanifa is 3 and 3 within the first unit at the front, and then the second unit just before ruku'. All right, so that's that issue of that. Now let's talk about the takbirs themselves. Should, for example, it be taken from a loose position or straight from where your hands are? Both of the opinions, they agree that it should be from this position, even though some scholars said that the basic position is to be hands at the side and then you lift up from there, and that you should return back to, it all goes back to where should hands go back to? A base position, everybody agrees, yes. But they said, what is the base position? What is the default position when you're standing? Is it hands by your sides or is it hands here? This seems to have a good base, and this also has an acceptable base. Both yani, an acceptable position, but in either case, hands will go back, or hands will go to the side. Hands will then go to the side after every takbir. All right. The next is, are the hands raised? According to those who raise their hands, they raise their hands. According to those that don't, they won't raise their hands. And there are some differences even in the Hanafi school with that as well. Some of them said this is actually one of the, and including janazah, one of the only times that we will accept the raising of the hands. But again, that's a discussion beyond the scope of this class. Then the speed. It is given clear. There is a few seconds in between, and these few seconds, the scholars have been narrated to make some dhikr yani to themselves, subhanallah, astaghfirullah, astaghfirullah, because we said there's never any silence in the prayer. You're just hanging around in between. That is what you would do. Okay, everybody, so that is the general structure of the prayer. In terms of the content of the prayer, subbihisma rabbikal a'la and hal ataka hadithul ghashiya, or qaf and qamar, very, very similar to what has been narrated with respect to Jum'ah prayer. What happens if the imam forgets some or misses some of the takbirs? Nothing, because this is not an obligatory aspect of the prayer. It's an additional sunnah. What about a person who comes late and misses, you know, some of the takbirs, and he arrives yani at the first rak'ah and he's already heard 4 or 5 go by? Scholars differed over this, but they said you'll just do whatever you catch with the imam and carry on, because it's a sunnah anyway. The other interesting difference between this and Jum'ah is that when the imam finishes the prayer, he turned around and the Prophet ﷺ turned around and said that whoever wants to stay can stay, whoever wants to go can go, which indicates immediately that the khutbah is not an obligation. Then he would remind the people, say something which is relevant, 2 sittings, just like the two khutbahs with the sitting in between, just like Jum'ah. And then the other interesting thing is that the Prophet ﷺ would, after the khutbah would finish, he would then give a separate address to the women. He would speak to them separately, he would gather them together, and he would address their issues that they might have an opportunity, because all of them are out and he's available, and so that is an opportunity for them. You often might hear the imam use the takbirat in the khutbah. In the khutbah, he would repeat Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, la ilaha illallah, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, wa lillahi alhamd. This has no basis. This has no basis. The takbirat is not something yani, part of a worship point for the prayer itself. Or the khutbah itself, it is part of the day, not linked to the prayer or the khutbah. Couple of scenarios we have. Can Salatul Eid be done in different places in the town at the same time? In principle, of course not. The whole thing is that it is meant to be one big gathering congregation that everybody attends, and that's why we do it outside in the mosque, and that's why all these initiatives that you see in the cities and, you know, to gather the people, they're great. Politics, of course, ensures that doesn't happen. People don't like to pray behind other people. People want to collect the money that people are giving. They're very generous, obviously, donations. People have contracts with charities. It gets ugly now. It's starting again, yani, even worse. and then they want to be able to have access to their more middle class kind of audience. There's some messy stuff out there, guys. It really is. In any case, all of that is out there, and it stops, unfortunately, the single big gatherings. And in fairness, we don't always have the legal permission. Also, the weather dictates a lot of that. And so, unfortunately, we have to have multiple congregations, multiple times of prayers, even though there should only be one, in mosques where it shouldn't be. All of this is permissible because of the need. But in principle, no. None of this should be done in principle. Okay? I've covered the rest of the scenarios in terms of women of legal excuse, meaning menstruation. They should attend the gathering. They don't pray, of course. And the other thing is, what about if you missed the Eid prayer? Okay, what if you missed the Eid prayer? What should happen? Other than obviously jump, you know, into the river and whatever, because that's probably what people do. Don't jump into the river. It is only a recommended act to repeat. In the Hanafi school, it's not something which is done afterwards. But a number of the scholars said that the prayer is important enough that you should do it again yourself. Some scholars even said that it can only be done in the Doha time. So you've got to do it the next day in the Doha time. I mean, I'm not going to lie, this is the advantage of having Eid on a couple of separate days, right? You miss it one day, you can get a cheeky opportunity the next day, especially if you follow the opinion that it can only be restricted to the Doha time, which is an opinion, which is an angle, all right? And finally, is a traveler obligated to pray Salatul Eid? If he's not obligated to pray Jum'ah, why on earth would he be obligated to pray Salatul Eid? So keep that in mind.